earlier in my career, I realized I was able to get ahead by being a great communicator. And I thought that being a great communicator was all about my way of landing my messaging, how I came across in front of others. But as I aged, I realized that being a great communicator is all about listening. And that's why listening as a business model, right? Like how you incorporate listening into your operations, into your marketing, into how you develop product, all these different things, to me is one of the most underrated opportunities for businesses out there. So when I saw Michael Haynes, who is an esteemed member of our community and comes to a lot of our internet talk shows and the open mic sessions afterwards, publish his book, Listen, Innovate, Grow, as a framework for how startups and SMEs can acquire and grow business customers in B2B, I had to pick his brain about the ways to listen, how to incorporate it, how companies are doing it wrong, how to do it on a shoestring budget. And it ended up being a great conversation. So I hope that you enjoy this conversation here with Michael Haynes that we did on our weekly internet talk show that happens on Mondays at 4:30 p.m. Eastern. And then we go directly afterwards at 5:30 into relationship-driven growth open mic sessions where we discuss what we just learned. People give their hot takes. I produce content for them. We do like a open session of giving each other advice, like a mini weekly mastermind that I would love for you to come. So you can sign up for that in the show notes. But for right now, enjoy this awesome conversation on listening with my friend in Australia, Michael Haynes.
If you know how it is, then you know how it might be. But think what it would look like if you grow your own community. It ain't easy. That's why you're listening to hear experiences from others just like you and me. Welcome to the B2B Community Builder Podcast, a show that was started because if you can unlock the power of having a community around your business, then you will create a source of referrals, validation, marketing content, and product feedback that will be unbeatable. But who has time to think about building a community when you need to be making sure that your team has what it needs to succeed in serving clients and bringing in revenue? That is why we'll be talking to business leaders like you and I that have cracked the code on why the community play is so valuable, how to implement tactics that got them there while still serving short-term goals, and what they can teach you that they have mastered. This show is for you if you are a CEO, CMO, or simply a rainmaker that has realized that without a community, you are just a commodity, but haven't figured out how to add it to your infinite list of priorities. This show is for you if you are a community professional or trying to be a community professional that is trying to convince leadership about the need to invest in a community strategy. This show is not for you if you think transactions are more valuable than relationships. I am your host and chief executive connector, Pablo Gonzalez, co-founder of BeTheStage.live, a marketing company that specializes in relationship-driven growth. I invented the relationship flywheel, and hopefully, I'm your new best friend. So smash that subscribe button, leave a rating when you do, and get ready to plug into the power of community creation for business development. Let's go. Welcome, everybody, to the B2B Community Builder Show. I am your host and chief executive connector, Pablo Gonzalez, and we're on episode 218, season 5 of the B2B Community Builder Show. I'm super pumped for this one. We're talking about 3 ways to listen to the market and innovate with a guy that's become my friend all the way from across the Pacific Ocean. The only person that I know that splits time between Canada and Australia on a regular basis. So right there, you got to know, he's got to know something about lifestyle design. But really, he's the author of this book, Listen, Innovate, Grow, which I find to be particularly really, really interesting. A great approach of how to grow small, medium-sized businesses and acquire clients sustainably. And it all starts with listening. So I want to welcome my friend, community member, earned his spot onto this show just by dropping brilliance for the community, Michael Haynes. Welcome to the show, my man.
Thank you so much, Pablo. Hello, everyone. It's fantastic to be here. Yeah, I'm thrilled and excited to be here. I'm really pumped for this conversation.
Me too.
And the strategy session afterwards as well.
And the strategy session. That's right. After the show, we go into the relationship-driven growth open mic sessions. We've got strategy. This one is heavy. I've got a bunch of stuff to share from this last week, but we always open it up to the community. If you have some kind of strategy advice that you want, open it up. We'll workshop it. You always get good advice here. We've been publishing them on a podcast. But right now, Michael, I want to welcome the community that's here. We got our friend that introduced us, Chris Cole. He's watching on Facebook. Chris, good to have you, man. We got Chela Diaz. We got Kay, Cody, and we got Tony Winslow, my good friend Tony, and fellow Ace Ventura impressionist here in the house. Make sure that you use the Q&A. Make sure that you use the chat. This is an interactive show, right? You have access to Michael and his brain and my limited brain capacity as well as I host this show. But Michael, let's get right into it, man. I, as you know, you have a three-step framework. I think it's brilliant. I think it's the right thing to do it. But when I first talked to you about this thing, to me, what really stuck out is this ability to listen, I think, is so underrated in the marketplace. Tell me, when you are, you know, when you're betting so much on the foundation for your framework, step one for a framework that you write a book about, that you build a business around, you chose listen. What is the importance of listening as you see it, that you gave it so much importance?
Great question, Pablo. Listening is vital to being able, irrespective of the size of your business, whether you're a solopreneur, micro business, SME, large corporate, listening, having that in-depth understanding around your own business, your market, your customers, your competitors. It is integral that you have an in-depth understanding of what's going on within those respective areas to help you make those key decisions and decide your pathway forward. Listening, in my view, Pablo, as we talked about before, is one of the most important activities that any business needs to undertake, but it's also the one that is either done the least and or done quite poorly. And so this book is written all about how do you listen? How do you listen effectively in a insights, data-driven manner that's going to allow you to make those strategic decisions and in ways that are practical and feasible for small and medium businesses? Because there are a variety of tools and approaches that you can use, but I wanted to make this really a practical, somewhat economical, actionable for our peeps of small and medium-sized businesses, for which I'm talking about everyone from our solopreneurs right through up to our larger, smaller, medium SME, SMB folk.
Beautiful, man. I don't know if you know this. I think you know a little bit. You know most of my story, right? Like I've parachuted into marketing because just out of a love for like networking and relationship building. Yeah. And I think it's the same foundational elements, right? My big aha moment, just from a personal standpoint in my life, came when I realized that it's not about what I'm telling people in every room. It's how I'm listening to people in every single room and observing what they actually need that really started changing my trajectory. And I, you know, as stupid as it sounds, I really didn't realize until like my early 30s that communication and relationship building and all this stuff is so much about listening. But now I'm all in. So I think that's why we echo on this. You mentioned something. You mentioned this idea that businesses tend to either ignore it or they do it the wrong way. I know that you talk to tons of businesses and stuff like that. So can you tell me a little bit about the current state of listening right now? When the average business that you talk to, what are they doing? What are they doing wrong? And why do they not realize that they're doing it wrong?
Well, that's a great question. So a couple of things. So in my career, as you know, I've worked with everyone from large corporates right down to solopreneurs. Large end of town, your big mid-markets, big corporates, they have the big budgets, they have access to lots of tools, and they will use a lot of very sophisticated approaches, segmentation, customer value analysis. We might do some big events, et cetera. They will do a lot of these big initiatives, which are quite technology intensive, time intensive, and they will use it, but they won't necessarily do anything with it. So I've spent countless years in my career dealing with heads of, you know, senior execs, from the different departments, operations, products, marketing, et cetera. Everyone's operating silo because either the big listening program they have established, they haven't shared the insights, or departments are doing their own form of listening and just doing it in a very siloed view. So that's a big end of town. For our end of town, small and medium-sized businesses, typically I find most often many are not doing a lot of listening, any at all. They're doing very little or not at all. Or they may be doing some, and they're often doing the likes of a survey, Surveys are fine, but surveys serve a very specific purpose, or they might be doing some social media listening. That's often common listening on social, but those elements can serve their purpose, but they're not enough. And we are B2B. And in B2B, you must be buyer driven. So that will have a lot of implications in terms of how you listen, how you're going to develop strategy, how do you engage. And so you must be using effective B2B listening approaches that are going to target for you to engage and interact with buyers. And that's often missed at a very high level, right across the board, I'd have to say, in terms of the kinds of listening and what kind of tools are being used to try to get that insight, that feedback that businesses are often seeking.
Got it. If I'm hearing you correctly, I'm hearing the big businesses have this like sophisticated suite of tools that aren't super accessible to smaller businesses. And even in the big business, they tend to like do a bunch of listening without a bunch of applied knowledge from that listening, which then probably drives the executive and the decision maker to be like, this isn't even really worth it. So, you know, maybe, and then it starts to trickle downstream from all the entrepreneurs that come out of that stuff to not value it. And that makes perfect sense. And then you're also talking about surveys and social listening. What are the ramifications of like thinking that this thing is like a survey and social listening thing? Like what is that lacking that we're going to get into of how to do better?
Okay. Surveys are generally really good when you know exactly what you want to measure. I just had this conversation with my MD yesterday on a client that I'm working with. So surveys are very good when you want to measure how many important, what is the size of. But again, Pablo, we are B2B. We are dealing with decision makers. And often when you are trying to develop, like for example, with my client right now, we're looking to develop a brand new financial services product to introduce to the market. It is a two market side play. So we have to understand from a merchant perspective, we need to understand from the decision makers, we need to understand their motivation, their drivers, their requirements. What is it going to take for company X to potentially want to partner and engage with us? When you want to be getting under the hood and you want to understand needs, motivations, drivers, requirements, processes, then you need to be using what we call more qualitative approaches, which is about having conversations, structured, in-depth conversations, so you can understand what you need, why, how much, why would this work, what would happen if you don't have it. So you need to unpack that. You cannot get that from a survey when you ask, you know, someone to rank 1 to 5. You just can't do that. And so
what I'm hearing from you there, Michael, is like the lack of the, it's like the goal is in the follow-up question, not so much the initial question. Is that what you're saying?
The goal is asking the right questions. And in surveys tend to ask you questions that you tend to just rate out of 10, what's most important to you. In order to be able to develop and identify, you know, how you're going to develop a strategy, how you're going to build a certain product or solution, how you're going to improve your service and support, we need to unpack and understand the whys, the hows. How would this work? What's needed? So quite often, what you really need is that meet what you get from qualitative by asking those questions where people can describe, explain, you're able to probe, explain that to me more. You cannot get those kinds of depth of insights, which are going to give you the insights and direction to make decisions. Well, not necessarily make decisions, but to understand, you know, how you might create a new product, how we're going to improve this product, how we're going to introduce this new service. What does this new community engagement program, customer program look like if we don't have those descriptive details so we can really get into the detail of scoping things out? Mm. People tend to often jump to doing the surveys to get these ratings, and ratings looks, yeah, I can rate you 4 on customer service, but what will it take to go from a 4 out of 10 to an 8 out of 10? That's what we need to understand. That's what we need to unpack. Because that's going to give you the feedback, the ingredients to be able to talk to your product team to say, you know, we need to make these changes here. Operations, we need to revamp the processes, or we need to revise the service level. You need to have that depth of and granular type of that. And you often get that from having discussions, getting feedback in a what we call a qualitative manner. And you can do those in a variety of ways. But that kind of depth of insight is gold, is powerful. It's what is going to give you the direction to know where, how, why is it important? Mm. What would this have to look like? And so it's very important that you really be considering using those kinds of strategic conversations, those qualitative approaches. But people often jump to surveys. As for social media, doing social listening is fun and you can get some insights from that. But again, in terms of, again, B2B, and we have to be buyer driven, talking to the decision maker, we have to be looking at a number of sources to really give us that depth of understanding of what our business customers want. And their demand and expectations are quite deep now. So that is why, some of the reason why surveys and social media, they can serve a place, but they are not enough in order to really take businesses forward.
Got it. Yeah. Sorry. So what I'm understanding from you is that most of these listening mechanisms will tell you where to stand, but won't tell you how to go from this level to the next level. And that's where the gold is. Talk to me, and we're going to get into how to do that. Talk to me a little bit about that, the first scenario that we described, the big businesses that do listening, even the small businesses that do listening, but don't operationalize it. What goes wrong there? Like, what is the breakage of folks that are out there listening, but they're not seeing results of them because they're not putting them to work?
Great question, Pablo. And the big problem is that the feedback, the insights that they're gathering from those listening is not being utilized across the organization by your different departments. So in my last full-time corporate role, I was head of customer analysis and research at Telstra Communications, working in their wholesale division. So B2B division, this big telco company. One of the things I spent 4.5 years with my co-author, actually, he was my market research supplier at the time, is we developed quite an elaborate, sophisticated B2B listening program. So we had some segmentation studies. I set up strategic customer workshops. I'm a big advocate of doing the strategic customer workshops where customer and service provider come together for half day or full day workshop to discuss, exchange information, exchange roadmaps, et cetera. So we had depth interviews, customer reviews, we had forums, but we built in a process to make sure those insights were being gathered and being fed back into the organization. So I implemented things like quarterly insight briefings, where there'd be quarterly meetings with the relevant teams to update them on what's going on. Garrus company designed a very elaborate knowledge repository so we could have all of this information available, and the different departments could access the different kinds of information. So the product and marketing teams could get things at a key account segment level. Executives could get the executive summary of certain things. Operations could get very detailed things. So really, in a nutshell, Pablo, it's about making sure that the information is being used across the organization and having various relevant mechanisms that they will use to do so. I have an SME client in Ottawa, insurance brokerage company. The CEO, Sylvie, is very savvy about marketing and understanding customers. So, it's a national company, but, much smaller. But she has a regular program of media, has a program and a schedule of meeting with her VIP clients. Sometimes an interview form, sometimes it might at different events. But she has a process where her account management folks have to feed back that information. And she's got a tool that she uses. It's not overly sophisticated to gather that information. And they also have the regularly, quarterly and regular monthly and quarterly management meetings and updates where that information is shared. I have another client that does a similar thing. So it's not about necessarily having sophisticated tools. It's about identifying what information you're needing, making sure you're gathering it, who needs it, and then what are going to be the practical ways that you can get it out there so it will be used and shared. Often having debriefs and meetings is a great way to do so, but then you may need to have some other way where, people can go back and access when they need that report and information. So it's really setting up a meaningful, appropriate process to be able to share and get access to that information.
Got it. So if I'm hearing that correctly, it's companies that are listening but not implementing are either having a breakage at the compilation of information and putting it somewhere accessible for people to reference, and or in the purposeful sharing of that information during different periods and continuing to go back to it and continuing not just making it available but bringing the mountain to Muhammad, right? Like bringing it to people on a specific cadence that will encourage the the implementation of it.
And that's the key. And that's the key, Pablo. You must have that share where they're actually going to see it. Just throwing it into any repository, I don't care if it's a notebook, I don't care if it's some sophisticated knowledge hub. Just throwing it into some area, that's not good enough. You need to have it communicated, so it's kind of in their face. Did you know this quarter? Okay, for our two key accounts, they are having issues with the service levels in which we're providing IT managed services. you got to make sure that it's getting out there, it's communicated to them so that they're going to be recognizing and utilizing it. What I've also done with some of my clients, Pablo, is integrating in terms of their account planning and business planning process, modifying those processes so their templates and their meetings does have an insight component into it. So what I mean by that, Pablo, in terms of when they're having their strategic planning workshops, in terms of their agenda, you built in into the agenda, okay, we're going to have a, key account customer insights update, 10, 15 minutes within there when we're going to have some key highlights of what's going on in there. In their business planning and in their account plans, having insights section integrated. So I've actually worked with companies, both SMEs and in large corporates in both contexts, to modify those planning tools to make sure, because you have to make this live and real and incorporate it as part of the fabric of doing business. So in both cases, we have modified, and in those templates, the account-based planning templates for account-based strategy, as well as some of the business planning, we integrate a section that goes right in there. In the planning sessions themselves, we put in, okay, we're going to put a block 10, 15 minutes in. So it becomes a fabric of doing business, because listening is not a project. It is a way of how the business has to run and continually run. So you have to put in the mechanism so it becomes a way of this operating.
And that sounds so human to me, right? Like the idea of, like, I'm always writing stuff in my notebook and not going back to it. But if I were to have a part of our weekly Be the Stage agenda be, hey, Pablo, look through your notebook and tell me something you learned and share it with us. Now we get the chance for, like, Rowan to learn that and operationalize it, or, you know, our content guys to be able to, like, start looking for that type of stuff inside the meeting. So the templatization and the, like, routinizing, right? Like making it part of the routine obviously has a ton of value, man. So let's go back. So now we understand, you know, listening is the root of all effective communication. Yep. Most people are either not listening or not putting the listening to work. Let's talk about how to do it, man. I love how you said a little while ago that most people, you know, it's hard to listen without blowing your budget, but that's what you like to preach, right? Like, what is an effective way to listen to your marketplace, listen to your, you know, clientele and your competitors and whatnot without blowing your budget? What do you teach people around that?
Okay. So in terms of, we'll start with listening to the market. And at some point I do want to come back to listening to you because that's important, but let's start with listening to the market and how not to blow your budget. I believe, and we're talking.
Well, hold on. Let's stop right there, Michael. What do you mean by listening to you? What do you mean by that?
Great. You need to make sure that as a business owner, and again, irregardless whether you're a solopreneur, you know, running that 200 person SME, you need to be listening to you because you need to have clarity in terms of, you know, where you're at. What is your vision? What are your goals? What do you want to be achieving? You need to make sure you have clarity around that. That's extremely important. You need to do a bit of an internal assessment. When I say listening to you, I'm also meaning listening to you and listening to your company. Understanding what are the strengths, you know, what are the strengths and weaknesses? What are the strong capabilities of your organization? Where are you looking to go? Very important you have clarity around that. And, you know, you want to make sure you have alignment with your leadership team around that, because in order to be able to move forward, when we start talking about different growth initiatives and how we're going to grow, you need to be very clear and you want to be aligned with that, you know, with your leadership team before you are going to start engaging in your listening activities, your business innovation activities, etc. So having that clarity of where we're at, where we want to go, what do we want to stand for, and doing that audit of what we're good at or what we're not are some clear things that should be done up front at the outset before we're starting to really get into the meat of things. So listening to you is very, very important.
Yeah. Thank you for bringing me back to that, man. As a podcast host, I got really excited with, like, the next thing that you just said. So I want to dive into it. I know that in your book, and we talked about this, we talked about this thing as the three ways to listen, you know, to listen, right, in order to innovate. And in your book, you talk about listening to yourself, right? You and your company, listening to the market, and then listening to customers, right? So I do want to honor that because I know that there is a real sequence to that. And it makes perfect sense, right? If I don't know where I want to go, how am I going to ask the right questions to get there?
Well, yeah, well, right? it's going to impact a whole bunch of things, you know, yeah. Depending on where you want to go. Well, who, you know, how should you be listening to the market?
Yeah.
How should you be listening to customers? Who should be listening for? Yeah. Who should be listening to? What should you be listening for? All of these things will have serious implications if we are not clear of and aligned as to, you know, where we're looking to go moving forward.
Yeah. So give me a couple of like maybe tips of if you are not doing this inside your company, you're not really listening to yourself, or like what can we add as far as internal listening mechanisms?
Okay. If we're talking listening to you,
yes.
Then I think you need to make time to do some of that listening, both as yourself, as the business leader, and then with your team, have an offsite where you are getting together and you're talking and getting clarity on that. And you don't have to spend a big budget on that. You can, you know, get a service office such as I am here, you know, for a couple of hours. If you want to go to somewhere that has a bit more motivation in terms of scenery. So it doesn't have to be, you know, big corporate style. You know, we're going 4 days, you know, to some, you know, fancy resort. It could be just finding a nice funky community center space or some restaurant getting space and spending just a couple of hours getting away from the devices, getting out of your office, and then having those, you know, honest conversations and discussions, and then documenting, coming to agreements and documenting in terms of what are our goals, what we're looking to do. So having an offsite, and again, I recognize this is for our people who have limited budgets. Take 2 hours out, go to your favorite coffee shop or get a service office. If you can find somewhere nice to go, then go and do that. I have a colleague who they have a pretty big backyard space. So, you know, they invite the staff over, whip on the Barbie, they have lunch, and it's just in the backyard of a person's home. But getting them away from the office, away from the devices, and just getting together, having those honest conversations, getting agreement and alignment, and documenting it as what we're going to do, and outlining the so what, what's next, that's a great way to do so.
Got it. So pattern interrupt, right? Like change the typical environment and spend some quality time together, right? An offsite, exactly. Right? Whether something like that. Right. What are the conversations to be had there? You said this. So, you know, what kind of like, apart from the idea of documenting what you're talking about, what would you put on the agenda if you're doing something like that?
Probably want to do a bit of a brief. You might want to do some quick reflection of how things have gone, you know, in the business up to that point. Where is the business at? You know, and not just looking at it from, you know, the financials, but what the climate of, what are you hearing and seeing around your customers, your industry? How are things internally within the company? And then, you know, where is you as a business leader? You know, where do you want to take the company? What are you envisioning that me as the next opportunity, new opportunities, finding out what your other peers, other leadership team are thinking of, what their goals, what are they wanting to do? And then maybe starting to come to some agreements as to, okay, what should be the what next? Well, what should be the kind of the two or three priorities that we may want to focus on? And then what's the next step? I'm very big on understanding the so what. So what's the implication and what's next? What's the next step? What's the next action? I'm very big about taking action. Because we all can write strategy documents till the cows come home. It's about knowing, being able to prioritize, break it down quite simply as to what are the priorities, whether it be issues or initiative, and then, okay, what's the next step? And the next step might be communicating, you know, to the rest of the team, but just being able to identify what's that next action step.
I like that, man. We talk a lot internally, you know, when we're doing content strategies and putting together either speaking points or pulling out clips from some of our podcasts or things for our clients. We talk about the what, so what, now what structure of compiling information. And I've seen it as a storytelling mechanism, but it works really well now that you mention it as a evaluation, like a self-evaluation, right? If everybody comes to, let's say we want to solve for something, right? Like, let's say we want to solve for how do we implement AI into our processes to make us better? And everybody is given the homework of coming up with a what, so what, now what, of like, what is the state that we're in right now? So what do you think we should do? And we can review everybody's kind of like how we all see ourselves and what you think we should do and come to an agreement and then create a now what, right? Like a what's next, kind of like what you just described. Sounds like a really, you know, approachable way of pulling your team together. And whether it's 2 hours or maybe you have like 4 or 5 different things that you do for a day or 15 things that you can do over 3 days, seems like kind of what you're recommending of how to listen to yourself.
Absolutely.
Oof. That was a golden nugget right there. I'm going to have my team clip that and paste that across all my social media channels. So if you could just give this a pause right now,
go into the show notes and connect with me on whatever platform you like to follow me on. Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn, whatever you want to be a part of my life in, connect with me there. I'm going to share that clip and you can share it with your friends so that they get the same lesson. It'll be adding value to their life. And while you're at it, go ahead and subscribe to the show if you haven't already. Hit 5-star review, right? You don't have to leave a review. You just got to hit 5 stars. If you want to leave a review, cool. And maybe send the episode to your friend. That would be awesome. That's it. I'm done. Back to the show.
All right, cool, man. I did all right summarizing that one. All right, cool. Now I've earned it. Let's talk about listening to the market.
Okay. Listening to the market. Yes, let's get into it. I'm sure that's what a lot of people came to listen to. I'm a big believer. You've heard me bang on about this before, Pablo. Listening to the market, if you are a business owner, an entrepreneur, whether you're a one-person band, you know, 250-person band, everyone needs to be listening to the market. It is not an option. It is necessary now. The world is changing too much with respect to your industries, with respect to your customers. We in B2B, we have particular challenges because the B2B buyers, you know, and that is our true customers that we're focusing on, they are changing in terms of behaviors, expectations, et cetera. We have to stay on the pulse of all of this. Now, again, I'm all about really trying to have very practical, accessible ways for us as small, medium businesses. My rule is that every business owner should be a member of the industry and or professional association of those markets that they're currently serving and or those they seek to serve. It is non-negotiable by my view. Why industry and professional association, Pablo? Because it is the repository for a lot of the insights, a lot of the information that you need to be able to gain that understanding of your markets, of your customers, of your competitors, to be able to move the way forward. Within your industry and professional association, often they've got the newsletter, they've got trade publications, they'll have the webinars, they may have certain events. These are all sources where you can be going to gain an understanding of what's going on with your markets, what's going on at a broad level with your competitors, what's going on with your customers as well. So your industry and professional association is a repository that I believe every business owner, you must be a member of, because you've got to stay on the pulse of what are the trends, what are the disruptions, you know, what are the needs of customers, what are a potential suppliers doing, what are potential partners doing. So you can get a whole raft of information right there. So that's one key source of listening to the market.
I'm a big fan of that, Michael. Let's go. How many you got so that I can come back to it? You were going to
there's really only three. So,
all right. Yeah. So let's start with that one real quick. The professional organization thing is something I, as a networker, I'm in, right? Like I love diving into a professional organization because I love walking in a room full of people I don't know. My problem with that sometimes is that I might just shake a bunch of hands of a bunch of people that are just like me trying to sell me the same thing. And maybe I get a newsletter and I'm just like, man, this is just like sponsorship material. Like, specifically, when you're getting involved in a professional organization to listen, give me some more tips around what is the right thing to listen to and how to put yourself in a good position to do that without wasting a bunch of time.
Okay. So just to clarify, when I say industry and professional association as a source of listening, I'm not really talking about going to a bunch of events. I'm talking about getting onto their website and seeing what is there. Because when you go onto that website, Pablo, it is a repository, a chest full of gold. So it start looking to see what are the webinars that have been put out there, on what specific topics. That's how I do a lot of my learning to keep on the pulse of what's the latest and greatest in terms of B2B strategy, go-to-market strategy, is when these other thought leaders and experts are doing their podcasts, their webinars, and is spending some time listening and taking some notes, because there will be some gold in those webinars, in those podcast interviews, those publications that they will be putting out. Spend some time, you know, someone needs to go through and spend some time, because there will be some insights there to maybe around your customers, might be profiled and might give you some insights as to what they need. It could be talking about developments within your industry. A lot of industry associations do research papers, white papers, those kinds of things. These are all access things that you will get either free or you might have to pay for your membership, but it is an investment worth doing. So I'm really talking about really honing in on the assets and the resources that those industry and professional associations provide, because those are gold. In terms of the opportunity to meet people and engage with them, absolutely, those can also be of value. When they have those events, be it conferences, forums, printing off the agendas of those, going through those agendas and strategically thinking, okay, are there certain topics we should be going and listening to because we're looking to build our capabilities. That's one thing we want to be looking for. Are there certain people we may want to reach out to because we're looking to engage with a micro influencer in our industry to co-create content to do a live stream on? You know, are there certain customers that we've been wanting to get on the face of Mr. Chief Customer Officer, but never been able to see them? Where might we be able to go and hang out when they're speaking and talking to them before or after? So events are gold, but print off those agendas and be really strategic as to what are we trying to achieve and what kinds of meaningful things that we can get out of going to an event as opposed to just, you know, hanging around at these networking times and Discord. But it's being very proactive as to who do we want to be meeting, talking to, you know, getting that initial handshake to start the conversation, or is there some specific learning to be done as well? So it's using events. I'm a big believer of events, but doing some planning in advance as to what do we want to get out of an event from participating beyond just the networking by chance and really having a plan for it. But again, industry and professional association, the assets, information, really understanding what's there and distilling and leveraging that is where I believe it's highly untapped. And that's what you really want to be diving in on.
Love it. Love it. All right. So it sounds like, I'm glad I asked this question because I think of these professional organizations and I'm thinking like room full of people. That's a gold mine to me. You're really strategic about the content that these places put out and mining the content that they put out, everything from their publications to their website, their podcast, to even in events. It's like go through the agenda to see what people are talking about, to see what sparks something of interest that you got to dive into to have a pulse of the industry. Love that. Yeah. All right. What's
number
two?
And there may be people at those events that you may want to be meeting because in your account-based strategy plan, you want to be, you know, I want to meet with Pablo. That's the one we're going to bring. How can we start and have a conversation with him? You know, so for meeting people, it can serve a purpose. Those events can serve a purpose as well. So events can be for learning as well as for those strategic introductions, you know, hey, didn't know you were going to be here and to help start the conversation with key people that you want to be interacting with.
Makes sense, man. All right. You said that we had three. What's number two?
Second one is doing secondary research. So, you know, there's often a lot of market research reports and studies that you can get. Now, if you often go through the likes of your Gartners and Forresters, many research reports you have to pay for, they can be quite expensive. However, the likes of your Gartners, your Forresters, your big consulting firms like the Bains, McKinsey's, Pricewaterhouse, if you go on to the research section, the insight section on their websites, they often have free summaries, executive summaries, which will have a lot of gold in them in terms of insights that you can get. Because I'll be quite honest with you, I'm a big user of research and data to do my listening. I don't buy a lot of stuff. And I'm very pedantic, even when I'm working with clients with fat budgets, because they can be expensive and you know, we as small business owners don't have big budgets to waste. But those executive summaries, if you go on to those consulting sites, they have a lot of, you know, summaries, free white papers, summaries of their reports. You can get a lot of good insights from those as well. So that's my recommendation in terms of secondary research where, yeah, your likes of your Gartners, Foresters, the big global consulting firms, go onto their main web pages, check out either the insight section, the research section. There'll be some free papers and or executive summaries that can be of high value to you.
Got it. So you're checking out like big consultancies. Is there a way for, you know, man, like, I don't know, give me an example of how to sort through these like consultant ones per space, like McKinsey. I feel like it's McKinsey talks to everybody, but nobody at the same time. I'm not a Fortune 200 company.
Yeah. So when you go onto those sites, often they're quite well organized, like by industry, by topic. So you can just zero in, you know, if you're, let's say, in the cybersecurity space, you'll go into, let's say, the insight section. And they often, those consulting firms will have a whole array of industries, whole array of topics. So then you can just zero in and see what articles, papers, reports. So they're typically fairly well organized that way. And then you can just zone in and just see what's there. They might have a new and featured section as well. That's another good place to go, where you can see what's happening. And yeah, so you don't have to, yeah. So you can research fairly targeted, fairly quickly to see if you can come up with some things, some good sources that way.
And you mentioned McKinsey. I think you've mentioned Hinge to me at one point. Are there any other names that ring off?
Yeah. So yeah, because professional services is one of the big areas professional services and IT are two client areas I work a lot with. The HINS Research Institute does a lot of studies. So they do a lot of research reports and go in depth into accounting, consulting, IT. And they do a lot of insights around the markets, around customers, around the buyers, their needs, expectations, their dynamics. So they do quite the deep dives. They've got their full reports and their full reports are very good, but they're not cheap. But they do have their executive summaries, which does give an overview as to, you know, what are some of the key learnings? What are some of the key watchouts? And so again, that's another example where, you know, not everyone has, you know, $700-$800 to buy these reports. So the executive summaries often can give you some good indications as to what are some of the key trends, some of the key watchouts that you can just get for free.
Got it. I mean, I feel like you've gotten really good at like mining this stuff, this content stuff. What's number three?
So number three is understanding your competitors. So it's very important to get an understanding about your competitors. But I want to preface, Pablo, we need to understand competitors from a buyer's point of view. The Rain Group, which is a big B2B marketing sales firm, they did a study and they found between prospective customers and sellers, there's only a 29% overlap as who's deemed as a competitor. We need to be thinking of competitors in terms of from a customer point of view, a buyer's point of view, what are the different alternatives that they will seek when trying to meet an objective? Yeah. So to use a life example, it's probably not completely, well, to use a live example. So if a company is setting up their, you know, marketing function, because I'm actually working on building up the operating model for this fintech that I'm working at. Now, in terms of, you know, if you want to look at your who are the competitors, the different alternatives, you know, you might go big marketing consulting firm, you could go freelancer, you could go subject matter expert, you might want to get someone from high-level graduate, executive MBA, candidate student. So you want to look at the different alternatives that your decision maker is seeking when they're trying to solve a solution. So you need to be thinking from their perspective, not just thinking from a technology perspective. I find too much, Pablo, folks will think, okay, if someone needs something around, let's say marketing reporting, oh, and they'll just think from a technology point of view. Well, alternative could be just do it manually in-house. It could be, I'm going to go on to Fiverr or something and get a cheap freelancer to do so. I might get some, you know, pre-packaged on. You need to be understanding from a customer point of view, the different alternatives that they're seeking, because chances are there will be alternatives that could be quite different in terms of methodology, approach that you haven't thought of. But from a buyer's perspective, it's an alternative to meet their objectives.
Such a good point. Tony's saying it in the chat, right? Like from a buyer's point of view is the move, right? Like you want to know what the job to be done is, not so much the, you know, the buzzword, the feature, right? It's like the benefit that they're seeking, not so much like the solution that they're seeking. People are much more problem aware than they are. Like they're married to their problem and solving their problem. They're not married to like the solution that they're actually looking at, right?
What is the job to be done, the problem to be solved, and how might I solve it? And it can be solved by a variety of ways. And based on that last bit of Rain research, there's a massive gap because what sellers are thinking, they're missing out a whole slew of competitors that they're not thinking. And again, this is why talking to your buyers, talking to your customers, how do you buy, who would you choose? And getting an understanding of that is so important.
I think this is a perfect transition into the third way that you listen to is listening to customers and buyers, right? Yeah. What can you tell us about that? What's the right way to do that?
Okay. So first off, I'm talking from a B2B perspective. And the fundamental thing that you must remember, if no one remembers anything else, I'll be blabbering on for an hour. In B2B, buyers and users are not one and the same. We have to be always targeted and thinking from a buyer-driven point of view. Who is the decision maker? Those that make the decision and those that influence the decision. Those are the people that we need to understand their needs, motivations, drivers. How do they research? How do they buy? What is their criteria? It is those people that we need to understand. And this is where things often go wrong in B2B, both with everyone from large corporates down to small businesses. I just had a meeting yesterday with my MD, with a prospective research agency, and we got into who are we targeting in terms of the customer? It is the decision maker. That is who we need to target. That is who we need to understand what they require. Quite often, a big error in B2B is that people ask users for feedback and they focus all their engagement and feedback at the users and no discussions with the buyers. That becomes problematic Pablo, when you start getting into larger organizations, even your larger SMEs, your mid-market, where there is more organizational structure, and you have the MD of that larger SME now, who's not fully into the detail, but is now has people under them. Because if you focus on a user level, you will be missing out on what the buyers require. And buyers have very specific needs now. Decision makers have very specific needs. If you are solely focused doing your surveys, all your interactions at a user level, and you're not targeting the buyers, that is how you can lose out when it comes time for renewals or new opportunities come up, because buyers have no awareness of your quality, experience, capabilities, because you've been only engaging. So you must make sure you're listening to the decision maker as it pertains to your category as well. Everyone thinks the CEO is the man of town, and that is not always the case. Again, as organizations get bigger and more complex, CEOs will often delegate to others who may just have an average title as being the decision maker. I'll give you an example. Back in my corporate days, I was working on a project and I was strategy advisor. We were doing this big project. The CMO delegated to myself and the market research manager, and they said, you're the decision maker. I just want you to give out of 10 providers, give me the top two, tell me who to go with. And I'm fundamentally going to, because I'm relying on you. So meanwhile, if you were to go on my title, I was just little Michael strategy advisor. But the CEO had said, no, you are the ones that can make the decision. I'm just going to basically, we're going to have a 10-minute meeting and rubber stamp. You must know who is involved in the decision-making and influencing the decision, and don't always assume it's the CEO, because CEOs often delegate to their very trusted staff that could be at various levels of the organization. So, again, doing your research, researching your companies and understanding who's who in the zoo is going to be quite important.
I love that, man. Something that I really echo with, I'm reading this book of what buyers want that they won't tell you. I think it's the name of it. It's all about behavioral economics applied to what your customer wants and won't tell you by Melina Palmer. And it's all behavioral economics applied to marketing, which is kind of how I got into marketing, because I love behavioral economics. But she mentioned this thing in there of when it comes to the decision, there's kind of these four quadrants. There is the user, there's the buyer, there's the person that benefits, and then there is the influencer of it. Right.
Yep.
And like understanding those four quadrants is really paramount to influencing the decision, right? Like understanding who your buying committee is, understanding who you're talking to. And it sounds like from your experience, everybody over focuses on the user as opposed to anybody else in that quadrant. And you're saying you really got to listen to that buyer, because that at the end of the day is the person cutting the check, and you got to be like speaking in their language, because they're the ones that are going to show up to your website and click the button, right?
Yeah. And yeah, it's very important. And you need to understand who those people are. Who are those decision makers? Who are those influencers? Because their influencers can be quite important, because quite often, the decision makers may rely on some of those influencers to do the short list. I'm dealing with that now with another client who, okay, we need to get MarTech systems in. Okay, let's get a, and he's palmed off, to his product marketing specialist. Give me the list of five, go research, give me the list of five, and I want you to vet those, and then we'll have a meeting with those folks. So that product marketing specialist is a key influencer now. He has a role to play, by virtue of he's going to be having some key input into that decision. And understanding how they buy is quite important in terms of how they buy, where they go for information. That is quite important, because that has big implications. By understanding your buyers, your decision makers, it will give you a couple of things. It will help you understand how they buy, where they're looking for information, because buyers now are doing a lot of independent research and they're doing it through third-party channels before they're ever eventually coming to your website. So for you to be able to do your proactive marketing and go-to-market, we need to understand these folks. Where do they go for information? Who do they talk to? Who are they looking at? We need to get an understanding of that, because you need to be visible, present, with the right kinds of tools and things where they look for information. That's another thing that you need to be keeping in mind.
Yeah. So give me like a practical application of this, right? So I see Alexander Loretti's here. He's a member of your community. I met him in your community launch, right? So he's got a practice. It's like an accounting practice for other businesses. If he were to say, I want to go out, I want to start listening to my customers.
Yeah.
What is How would you advise that he sets that up? What are, you know, like, and like, how do you deploy that? Give me like a quick synopsis of how he would deploy the listening piece to customers.
Right. So in terms of listening to customers, I tend to, yeah, with my SME clients, I start pretty simple. Okay. Let's start off with who are your top 10 clients? So, you know, let's start off with who are your top 10 clients that are spending, that are your bread and butter. So who are your top 10 clients? Who are the decision makers in those top 10 clients? Okay. And I'm going to say, who are the current decision makers? Because there's been a lot of moving around and so forth. So we want to be making sure we find out who that person is. And then it's about having structured discussions with that person to understand where they're at, where they're looking to go, what are some of their frustrations, and really starting to unpack, you know, where do they go for, you know, advice, insights, information. B2B buyers are looking for what I call AIR, advice, insights, and recommendations. So you want to understand what kind of AIR are they looking for? How are they going to be using it? So having those kinds of, so starting up and having those kinds of detailed conversation with your current customers, documenting, recording that, and then again, sharing that and feeding that back with your team is quite important. So yeah, starting with your current customers, I tend to then expand it out somewhat then to say to the next step, let's try to do a bit of a market view. So in terms of current customers, a couple of things. One, your top 10 customers that are most important, but then also, can we get a bit of a broader mix? Let's try to get more market view. So can we also speak to a few customers that also hate us as well? Talking to prospects or those that never have done business with you or those that have left can be quite good as well. So you want to try to be talking not just with your current customers, but if you ideally can have some conversation with prospects, those that have left, then you start to get a market view, because then you get to understand what are some of the potential opportunities out there that you're not aware of, you haven't considered. But first step, talk with, you know, who's your top 10 customers? Okay. Who are those decision makers, and have, you know, strategic plan conversations with them. That's a great starting point, because you will without a doubt uncover some insights as to what you need to be doing within your organization. You'll quickly get some insights as to what's wrong, what needs fixing, which then leads to the next element around innovating.
Man, I couldn't agree with you more, right? Like this, I love this AIR framework, advice, insights, recommendations.
That is what B2B buyers are looking for now, Pablo. This 100%. Show up and throw up and making the pitch, those days are done. Those days are done. Selling in B2B is much deeper, and it requires a much deeper skill set of being a strategist, change agent, decision architect. Someone who you should be getting on your show is Douglas Cole, author of the Sales MBA. Yeah, because he talks about that. Because those are the three new roles now that every B2B seller needs to step up to do. It requires more skills, more effort. I think there's a big resistance in doing so, but it's what is needed by virtue of how buyers now buy. Buyers expect more. They want to know what happens after the sale, Pablo. How are you going to work with me? How are you going to help me deliver to my objectives? What's that mutual action plan? These are the things that they're looking for now. This show up and making up the pitch. You can go and make up the pitch, that's fine, but they're still going to do their own research through third-party sources. They're going to go to events, they're going to read the white papers, and it'll be, you know, when they're ready, then they may come back to you if you fit the bill. But yes, listening, starting off with your current customers, ideally if you can talk to some prospects and even those that left you, share that information back with your within your team. So have a cross-functional team meeting, say, what did we learn? What does this mean across our business in terms of product, operations, service and support? What does it mean in terms of from an account, a customer account management point of view, overall customer experience point of view? Then you undoubtedly from these discussions, you will start to unpack, okay, where are some things that need to be fixing and changing? And then that starts to help you give you guidance where to prioritize and where you might need to business innovate.
Man, this insight completely, you know, changed the way that we deliver our product. And I love the AIR framework, right? Advice, insight, recommendations. Because we used to come in, and when we would be doing a content strategy for a company, we'd come in and we interview them and find out everything about them, and then, you know, create this scope of how to launch a podcast that they can use to create all this like social validation content and whatnot. And we realized that what their buyers really want is to see other people giving them the advice that validates their product, right? And so we completely changed the way that we launch our shows and our communities and things like that to do exactly what you're saying, right? Like go to your 8 to 12 best clients and ask them for advice, ask them for insights and recommendations across every part of the buyer journey, from being like problem unaware to problem aware, from problem aware to solution aware, from solution aware to provider aware, from provider aware to provider, you know, like cutting it down. And we started launching, we started doing that as the beginning part of our of the way that we launch an ongoing engagement with people. And then we quickly realized that that had enough value to it be a product by itself, right? Like these conversations recorded with your 10 biggest clients that provide all these insights. And when we're recording them, we then edit them into compilation pieces of what everybody's saying, which allows you to share it with your team and allows you and allows us to make actual content that people can put into ads, people can put into social, people can put on websites to provide exactly this, right? This like advice, insights, and recommendations of other people like them as the driver of, you know, why you should do business with us. And it's been an awesome product. And I love the way that you kind of like frame it all and put it together in that really simple acronym. Michael, I want to, first of all, I want to say that in about 2 minutes, we're going to start inviting people up onto the stage to do our relationship driven growth strategy sessions. We'll just have an open mic session here with Michael and myself. And if you have any kind of questions that you want to bring to us that Michael can answer directly, I can. The rest of the community, really smart people in the house right now. We got Tony Winslow, Venia, Scott Wilder, a bunch of really brilliant minds here. But I wanted to talk to you a little bit about community, Michael, because I know you told me that it was really, really important for us to hit on that piece. Where does community fit for you as inside your Listen, Innovate, Grow framework or the advice that you're giving other people?
So community is quite important to me because communities now is part of how buyers buy. It's part of how where buyers are going for advice, insights, and recommendations. No one wants to be sold to. People want to buy from. They don't want to be sold to. They want that advice, insights, recommendations. They want to be able to hear other people's experiences. They want new ideas. They want to learn, you know, gain new insights, new skills, new capabilities. They want to be able to come together. And so that and communities now has become a big source now. It's been documented by a few studies, by a few of the research firms, that communities now is a big part of the B2B buying process now, because they want to have that trusted, you know, they want to have that trusted source that they know that they can talk to their people, not be sold to, but I can talk to you, Pablo, and ask how you've approached something. And I can talk about my experiences, my challenges, and gain some ideas of, you know, different ways of doing things or how I might be helped. So, and so really it's that transition of how business buyers are buying and how they, that need for air, that need for advice, insight, and being able to exchange with their peers and being able to interact. That is why I am a big believer of community as being something that should be part of your B2B strategy. And for me personally, why I've launched my own community legacy is I'm very big on seeing SMEs thrive and seed in B2B. Because B2B, I really do believe, is the place for small, medium businesses, and it has massive opportunities. But you have to know how to navigate the landscape, which is constantly changing, buyers becoming much more demanding. And so community is a way to bring folks together and to really empower them, educate them, inspire them on how they can succeed. Because if you can get it right, B2B, massive opportunities, it can just, you know, enable you to build the growth, impact, and life and legacy you ultimately seek. So that's my reason for being for community, for setting up legacy. Yeah.
I love it, man. You know what really echoes for me? When I first started, you know, 9 years ago, really pursuing this community creation as business development, as like a North Star, I thought of it as growth, right? Like I thought of it as like, man, if I got a bunch of people out there recommending me, then I'm going to grow. And it's a really easy to have, you know, like all these evangelists in my corner and bringing people into the fold. But as our iterations of doing this thing, and really particularly once we really dialed it in and got that $40 million community for JWB in year one, what we realized is that it is truly a source of listening, right? Like our takeaways was this idea that out of 4,000 people that we got into a community, it was 30 people that were really driving the bus of, you know, telling us what was working here, why it was valuable to them, bringing other folks in and tapping into community in the exact order of your book, right? Like as a way to listen, that allows you to innovate in order to serve your client better, that then creates this like flywheel of growth, to me is the thing that really echoes for me when I read this thing. And I love this book, man. Like I've put some work into it. I'm a slow reader. I'm more of an audio thing, but I highly recommend it. It's a really, really good framework for anybody that's thinking about how to like operationalize like a sustainable way to grow your company. And man, I just want to offer you a chance to let people know where to connect with you after after a friend that's just listening in her ear, listen to this on podcast, where do they go to get some more Michael Haynes?
So to get some more Michael Haynes, two places. You can go to listeninnovategrow.com. So that's my website where there's all kinds of content around B2B, how to listen, innovate, and grow. Also there's details there about the legacy community, the legacy SME B2B community, which I've just launched. And it's all about educating, empowering, and inspiring our people of SMEs in B2B to really thrive and succeed. So you can check me out there and also on LinkedIn. So I'm very active on LinkedIn. So love to connect. So reach out, connect with me, ask me questions, always looking to stay on the pulse and help my fellow peeps when I can. So that's it.
I love it, man. Personally, dude, I have to acknowledge you, right? You came into like my ecosystem through Chris Colt, right? Like, cause I had him on a show and you showed up. Yeah. And you were somebody that really does what you preach, right? Like you have tapped into the thing that we have going on here. You've been listening. You've been helping me innovate. You've been helping me grow. And you've just shown up here in a very, very generous spirit. You never even asked me to be on the show. It was something that I did, you know, like I asked you to do it because I'm so fascinated by your framework. But it just speaks wonders of your character and the way that you show up to things and the way that you share and how you come from experience and the people that you help is just something I really, really admire, man. So thank you so much for being a guest, being a great member of this community, man, and all the great work that you're doing. I just want to say I appreciate you, dude.
Well, I appreciate you. Thank you, Pablo. What you're doing is great. I truly believe in what you are doing because it makes sense. It makes sense. It is what is needed. It is what B2B buyers are now seeking. They want community. They want a forum to have advice, insights, recommendations, exchange ideas, ask questions. Then this is what they need. This is how you start the conversation. This is how you unlock opportunities. And so, yeah, what you're doing, it just makes a lot of sense. And we've touched on this a little bit before. What you're doing so needs to become part of what true strategic B2B marketing needs to entail. So I just love what you're doing. It's authentic, it's real, but it's in line with what markets, with what the buyers want. So it's just awesome.
Boom. Great conversation by Michael Haynes. He is a super valued member of our community and just honored that he shows up every week to the live internet talk show and the Relationship Driven Growth Strategy session. So if you want to meet him, come on down and join us on a Monday at 4:30 and stick around 5:30 for the open mic sesh, or just come for the second one. I don't mind either way. The other thing that I would love to recommend is go pick up his book, Listen, Innovate, Grow. It's a great little guidebook. And also, I'm going to Podcast Movement Denver 23. It's at the end of August in Denver. I've always said that going to conferences that have content creators is a great way to scale your networking. So start thinking about that for your calendar, late August in Denver. It's going to be awesome. Let me know if you want to go and hang out with me. And of course, got to thank my team as always. Number one, I always thank Rowan because she just keeps me doing all the things I need to be doing as the account manager on this project. Gina, who's built this amazing world-class culture and brought us an amazing team and recruited amazing talent, like her right-hand Marge, who makes everything happen. JP, our employee number one, who does all the cool stuff, right? He's making all the videos, he's making all the audio stuff. Everything that you see and touch is touched by the creative director of our company, JP, employee number one, who is training another awesome creative, Philippe, to follow in his footsteps and do great things for us, like the client activations that we do for our clients, and repurposing that type of content, all helped by Rita, our content strategist, who basically takes the things that we promise and makes sure that you get the results that we say based on the content that we are creating, right? Like making sure it's all congruent, the story is right, that you're getting the results that you need. Our two awesome account managers, Joanna
and Joyce, and our amazing superstar writer, Nicola, who has been my buddy now for going on like 4 or 5 years. He's turning into a man. When I first started mentoring when he was 13, and he interviewed me on a podcast, and now he's becoming a world-class writer. So I want to thank the whole team, and I want to encourage you to always, always consider the impact of relationships being more valuable than transactions. See you next week.